This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt.
What?
On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. I am Dean Holland with Charlie Dobbin. We are both in our respective home studios, and I just can see her dancing away like the flowers.
It's
like,
I'm giggling. I love that music. It just makes me want to move.
Oh, wow. That's a great start to The Garden Show. Fabulous. How's your week been?
It's been excellent. Boy, things are really popping. We did get a little bit of rain. Hallelujah. Not enough, but you know, some is better than none. Yes. So instead of being parched yellow here, we're kind of pale green right now. A little bit of lawn greened up a bit. I mean, you've got to keep in mind that where I live, it's wide open. Pure sun, pure wind. You get into other parts of the county where, you know, the older, more established trees and homes and deep soil, et cetera. And it's beautiful and lush and green. So, it's a beautiful, beautiful summer day here.
Yeah, we have had much the same weather as well. We're maybe a little more sheltered on our property. We have a little bit more tree coverage. But and we did get a good day of rain about 3 days ago. We had a nice top up, and it just because it rained through the night, and it was great. But we could use some more still, I think.
Absolutely. We are on a well. And of course, when you're on a well, right. It can really limit your ability to not only have showers and brush your teeth, but also to water plants. So no matter how much I want to plant, I'm always going, hold on, you don't have enough water to keep all this stuff alive. So it's a bit of a process, because remember, until plants are truly established, we have to consistently water them. And when it comes to trees, that's 4 to 5 years of TLC when there's drought like this.
Gotcha. Okay, let me give out those numbers because we would love for you to call with any of your questions, comments, stories about how much rain you're getting where you are in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or anywhere toll-free in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. And of course, let Carlos know if you are a first-time caller, and you will get your garden wings. There you go. Call often, call early, and one question per call. Please. We do appreciate that. And I guess we have to take our first break, but we will be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yes, this is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, and I'm Dean Holland. And I got to tell you, Charlie, we were up bright and early this morning, and Gail and I walked through our garden and just looked at, you know, things that were coming up. And, she was cursing the squirrels today because one of her late blooming allium, they, of course, bit it off right at the base and chopped it over. So
that doesn't make sense. No squirrel in their right mind would bite an allium. Well, that's an onion.
Yeah, we get a lot of rabbits around here. We get more rabbits than squirrels, so we were wondering. But they just, something bites it off and it was tipped over. It was like somebody cut down the tree.
I bet you they took one bite and went, woo, and ran away.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, and what have you had on have you got things coming up? Any announcements before we go to our callers?
The one I would like to mention is next Saturday, so a week today, I am participating with the Trenton Horticultural Society. They meet at 61 Bay Street, which is a senior center in Trenton. There's a potluck dinner. Actually, there's a flower show, which is a competition. And then there is a potluck dinner. And then I am part of the dinner. I'm part of the potluck. Anyone can attend. It's only $10 for guests, or you can join the Trenton Hort Society and be a member for life.
Well, that sounds like a good thing. We should do that. Yeah, I'm going to give those numbers out again. 416-360-0740. It's a toll-free number if you are anywhere other than Toronto, anywhere in the province of Ontario, and that number is 1-866-740-4740. Let's go to our first caller. We have Trudy on the line from St. Catharines, Ontario. Welcome to the Garden Show, Trudy.
Good morning, and welcome you guys as well.
Morning.
Good morning. Unfortunately, we do not get much rain here in St. Catharines. You had rain, we get nothing. Wow. 2 years ago, my front lawn died. As I know you're supposed to let it go dormant, but then it went dormant and it died. Is there something I should, like, is there a period of time where you need to start to water it again so it won't die?
Yeah, the window is 6 weeks. So okay. A lawn, a reasonably healthy turf lawn, should stay alive, even though it's dormant, because of lack of water, for up to 6 weeks. But as soon as you get past that, you know, 5.5, 6 week mark, the plants start to die.
Okay, because mine's already gone dormant right now. So.
Yeah, which is fine. But, you know, watch the calendar, right? And that's why we love garden journals. And it's funny, if you do keep a journal and you track it year after year, it's so amazing the things that we think happened last year. And then we look and go, oh, no, actually, that didn't happen. So track your rain, track when it happens or if you're having to water.
Thank you so much. That's exactly what I needed to hear.
Fabulous. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Trudy.
Okay, thanks.
Something you said there, Charlie, reminded me of something rather unique, I think. If you're familiar with the Museum of Dufferin in Dufferin County, it's a beautiful museum that is, I think it's been made out of a barn or made to look like a barn. And we used to pass through there. Of course, my wife's family's from Hamilton and her mother grew up in Laurel, Ontario. And when we stopped in there, basically the story is that her great-grandfather and his brother were both farmers in the Laurel area. And they used to, one of them used to keep like a diary, mm-hmm. Which was, and that they started a small farm implement museum, which I understand really became the basis of the Museum of Dufferin. And so all of my wife's family archives are sort of in the lower level of that museum. They were saying that he did a very odd thing for a male to do, a male farmer. He kept a diary and he kept temperatures, weather conditions, rain patterns, all sorts of stuff. He kept it. So they have that apparently in the basement. And that goes back about 100 years.
It's pretty interesting from an archival perspective because, you know, we talk about climate change and we talk about global warming and, you know, weather events. We don't have snowfall anymore. We have snow megadon. So it is interesting to have that historical information to reflect back on.
Yeah. And I'd forgotten, we don't talk a lot about garden diaries, but I guess they really are a good thing to keep. I don't know if you have any tips on starting a garden diary or what kind of, how you, is it very basic or?
Yeah, well, you know, everybody's got different things they want to keep track of, but there are garden journals. I mean, one of my favorites is one that's put out every year. It's actually just out of reach, I think. Hold on, let me see if I can grab it.
Yeah, because
I have it right here.
You have it?
Yep. I'm going to show it to you on camera. If we were in the studio right now, I would put this on the camera.
Okay.
It's actually called the Toronto and Golden Horseshoe Gardeners Journal. And this is published every single year. And it's available for sale online and at places like Indigo, et cetera, Toronto Botanical Garden. It was all started by Margaret Bennett Alder. It is an amazing resource. It's full of all kinds of sources, but it's also designed. It's changed over the years. Like back in the day when we used to take photos, it used to have pockets to stick all your photos
into.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
So now, of course, it's not like that because we do all our photos digitally. But nevertheless, it is set up with a daily journal and tips for every single week, tips of things to consider remembering to do, which we like to talk about here as well. So that's just one example. There's lots out there, but I love this one because it's nice and light. It's easy to work with, and it's very sturdy.
Fabulous. Okay, we have to take our next break, but we do have some callers on the line, so we'll get right to them as soon as we return here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back with the Garden Show. I'm Dean Holland. And Charlie, you are in Prince Edward County today, and I am in Collingwood. And we have some callers on the line. Okay, we're going to go to Thornhill right now. We have Ivan. Ivan, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Charlie and Dean.
Good morning.
Big fan of the show and the Healing Gardens. I have a quick question about zinnia plants. There's some bugs eating the leaves of my zinnia plants, but it's not touching the other plants. Do you know exactly what that is and how do I get rid of it?
Have you taken a real close look to see if you can see anything?
I have, but the leaves are practically gone, and I cannot see any bugs on the plant at all.
So whenever I see, like zinnias, of course, we grow them in full sun, hot, sunny, the better. So we never concern ourselves that it could be slugs because slugs are shady based critters. So whenever I see damage on plants that are in full sunny locations, but no evidence of insects during the day, I start to suspect earwigs. Earwigs do all their eating at night. And so what you can do is you put on a little headlamp and you go out, you surprise them in the middle of the night and see if they are there eating. They are not something, because my point is, if you don't see insects on a plant, there's no point in spraying soap or an insecticide because you're basically just wasting it. It's not going to kill anything. These insecticides or soap must contact the insects. So with earwigs, of course, we don't find that any of those insecticides work well at all. We set up traps for them, little earwig traps. Right. And that's just like a hollow piece of hose, empty hose, or hollow bamboo stake. Just something where they, because they hide during the day. They don't like the sun. You give them a nice little shady spot close to the zinnias to hide out, and then go out during the day with a little bucket of water and lift up your hollow hose or bamboo stake, tilt it up over your pail of water and bang on it and see if earwigs that are sleeping in the hotel you've set up for them all drop into the pail or not. They should, because that's where they will be during the day, wherever you provide a nice little shady spot for them. They are out during the night chewing.
Okay, is there a reason why they're targeting the zinnias and not like the hydrangeas or the daylilies?
I think they do have preferences. Many insects have preferences. Are these tall zinnias you're growing or short ones?
They're both tall and short.
And so you feel like you have virtually no leaves left at all, but the flowers are okay?
Some of the flowers, I'm seeing holes in them.
Yeah, so that's why I even suspect earwigs even more. I mean, because remember, at the end of the day, I mean, the leaves are nice, and then the leaves are important for photosynthesis, but they're not nearly as important as the flowers. Because, right. Of course, when we grow zinnias, we're wanting to grow, little butterfly runways, not to mention bright, beautiful flowers. So, do everything you can. Make sure that you never know. Sometimes the zinnias might be stressed on some level. Right. So they're sending out an invisible communication to insects saying, I'm in trouble. I'm weak. Come and get me. I'm under stress. So, it's not, or they could just taste a lot better. Not many insects eat daylilies, and hydrangeas, it's pretty specific as well. Right. So I would, like I say, I'd suspect earwigs, but I would look after, have you fertilized those zinnias at all?
I have, but they are in a little bit of shade, so that's probably what's stressing them.
Maybe. So maybe consider next year planting them, if you can, in a sunnier location, or make sure they're far enough apart so that there's good air circulation, because zinnias need to get that air happening as well.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Have a lovely day.
Thanks for the call, Ivan. Okay, yeah. I mean, because that makes sense. Different bugs like different stuff. I mean, if I got up in the middle of the night, I'd probably grab a hamburger, but, somebody else might have a piece of pizza, right?
Yeah.
What would you grab in the middle of the night? What's your go-to? What do you like to snack on?
Oh, I'm not telling you.
are you more of a sweet or a savory person?
No, I'm a salt. I'm a salt.
Yeah, me too.
Pretzels
or
something. Yeah. So I'm more
potato chip guy.
Yeah, exactly. Dean, just so you know, I'm sure Evan is still listening. Remember sometimes when the old stream of water, get out that hose, high pressure, or not, not so much high pressure, but, a good stream of water out of the hose and wash down those zinnias, because there could be microscopic something or others on the plants. Could, it could be something crazy, like there's something, white fly, which of course are horrible to have. Leaf miners, which are typically inside the leaves. But either way, just a good, sometimes a good scrub down with pure water can just freshen things up when plants are under stress.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? I know that I have an email in the bucket about bugs, but let's get to this caller first, and then I'll get that email ready for afterwards. Okay. We have Zoe on the line from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Zoe.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I just have a question. I heard a couple of weeks ago, if you want to clear some weeds, et cetera, to use cleaning vinegar. So I'm trying to get rid of, I think they're violets, in a patch of grass. So I did that. I killed them, quite a bit of grass. But anyhow. So now, a couple of weeks later, they're all coming back. I can just see little evidence of them all coming to life again. So I was just wondering, how do I get rid of these violets?
Okay, so violets are very hard to get rid of, number one. They've evolved over the centuries to survive all kinds of adverse conditions. Keep in mind that cleaning vinegar or any of vinegars as a herbicide to kill plants is non-selective. So vinegar of a high enough concentration will kill anything that it contacts, which is why you saw some death in your grass, but not so much death in the violets.
Yeah.
Violets, the best time to try and control them is early in the spring when they're still young. The younger the weed, the younger any plant, the easier it is to kill. The leaves are just that much more susceptible to anything toxic on their leaves. So best time to, like I say, get violets is early in the spring. Frankly, one of the best ways to get rid of violets, unfortunately, is to dig them, and digging them means getting all those. See, what's amazing about violets is not only do they produce seeds above ground because of, you know, from the flowers, but they also, the little, you know, sneakers, produce seeds underground. So they are able to not only spread above ground, but also underground through their own DNA and genetics. Sneaky, sneaky plants. So hard to get rid of. Digging them at this point, solarizing, remember the idea of putting that tarp over top and weighing it down with rocks and just robbing them of light, that can work. But again, it's going to take 3-4 months to really kill violets because violets are just that tough.
Okay, just tell me this. So I'm digging this patch up and we're going to put, I think part of them is going to be covered with rocks. So I thought to myself, they look kind of short. They're not that tall. So will they won't come up through eventually through the rocks. Will they just eventually die off?
They'll come up between the rocks.
Yeah, but they'll kind of, they can work their way between the rocks.
Oh, yeah. Nefarious plants. I can't tell you, I foolishly planted violets back at my Richmond Hill garden years ago, not realizing how invasive they can be. And before you knew it, of course, the entire neighborhood had violets. And my lawn was quite infested as well. And I hired every teenager in both my family and neighborhood to come and dig violets at my house every spring. And we filled green garbage bags like crazy. And then I would just sit the green garbage bags in the sun and let them die inside the bags because they're very hard to kill.
Well, I've started to dig them up. But it's an awful lot of, it's hard digging stuff. I thought
that's what I'm
just up and
saying.
Put in.
Hire your teenagers.
All right. It looks like it's a yearly job. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks
okay.
for calling.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Yeah. That's, I didn't realize that they were that hard to get rid of. And seeds underground. I didn't realize it's even possible.
Sneaky. Yeah, exactly. It's a very unusual plant that it does that. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, let's get to that. Oh, I'm going to give the numbers out again. 416-360-0740 or anywhere toll-free in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. We would love to hear from you. And we did get an email from Kim. And she writes, Charlie, it's been a few years since I've contacted you. I sent you an email a few years ago about crazy chipmunks eating the bulbs in our gardens. Anyway, since then, we have been listening to your show and always get great tips. Okay, new problem. So some crazy insect is eating away at the leaves on my zucchini, squash plants, and cucumber. We have never had this before. Enclosed is a picture, which she sent you. What are they and what do we do before they destroy anything that is starting to grow? Again, that's Kim. And she says, yeah, okay, there you go.
Yeah, so thanks, Kim. That's a great question, and it's a timely question because she's not the only one, I'm sure, who is looking out at their garden and seeing massive holes and serious, you know, destruction of the cucurbits. So that's the squashes. Like cucumbers are what we call a summer squash. Zucchini, same thing. And then we get into our acorn squashes and butternut squashes, which are the winter squashes. And the insect that loves those is, believe it or not, called a striped cucumber beetle. And it's a great name because, sure enough, they have stripes. They're yellow with black stripes. And they sometimes you'll see them with spots. But most usually here in Ontario, it's the striped ones that do the damage. And they do. They'll eat flowers. They'll eat and obviously affect your fruit production. They'll eat, you know, cause leaves to be destroyed by eating them. But the other thing they do that we don't like them for at all is they often carry a disease on their body. And it's just a coincidence that when they're eating, they share this disease. It's called bacterial wilt. And that's what causes the particularly the cucumber plants to suddenly overnight just collapse, right? Before your very eyes. So they go from being green plants with, you know, cucumbers hanging on them, few holes in the leaves, and then one day the whole plant is just hanging completely wilted. And you think, oh, it must need water. But no, it's because that cucumber in a beetle has provided this bacterial wilt disease to your plants. And it's too late now, unfortunately. I mean, we can get out there and one of the recommendations is the yellow sticky traps. Many insects are attracted to the color yellow. So the yellow sticky traps we can buy at our regular, you know, home hardwares, etc., are the ones called sticky sticks made by Safer. So sticky sticks, it's like fly paper, but it's yellow and sticky and insects get attracted and get stuck to the yellow stickiness. You can try, they're hard to pick and squish, but you put some newspaper or cardboard beneath the plants, give them a bit of a shake, and all the beetles will fall down onto the cardboard or the newspaper, and then you quickly tip them into just a pail with a bit of water and a drop of oil or drop of soap, and that will cause them to drown. Here's a cool tip I read. Because they're hard to pick up, you put on yellow gloves because they won't see you coming because of the yellow gloves, and you coat them in petroleum jelly, and then they're much easier to pick up, right? Because they'll just stick to the jelly, to the petroleum jelly. So, you know, craziness that way. It depends how much time you've got and desire to get out there and collect these little guys. But honestly, one of the best ways to deal with something like the cucumber beetle is with row covers. And row covers are just like a big sheet of cheesecloth. There's different sizes of row covers and different densities. But what you need is you cover your seedling, so back earlier in the season, with row covers. And that protects them from insects flying in and getting happy in your cucumber bed. But because cucumbers require insect pollination, you do have to take the covers off when they're blooming in order for pollination to take place. And then, you know, obviously the fruit will be set and then the covers go back on. So, you know, it's one of those in and out, up and down with your row covers, trying to protect, but at the same time trying to allow pollination by insects, or you can hand pollinate as well.
That's a long story for a short answer. That's very, as you say, some of this stuff is very involved. And I was wondering, as you were saying that, whether those yellow sticks that you're talking about, the sticky sticks, is that something that is, rather than waiting until there's a problem, is it good to just sort of put those in your garden maybe at the start of the season just to be on the safe side? Or I don't know.
Well, I mean, you could, but remember, there's lots of insects that we love and that are beneficial and we don't want to kill. So, you know, that's the issue whenever we do, whether it's a spray, like a non-selective spray insecticide that kills everything that it touches, we say to ourselves, well, but I don't want to kill lacewings and praying mantids and ladybugs. And there's lots of things we don't want to kill, but then there's things we do. So that's the challenge when it comes to any of these. And the sticky sticks are, again, non-selective. All insects love the color yellow.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we have another caller on the line, Neela, we're going to speak to. And it looks like Neela might be from Meaford. Is that correct? Welcome to the Garden Show, Neela.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, Dean.
Is it from Meaford, yeah?
Yes, yes, that's Neela from Meaford. I just want to ask Charlie a couple of questions, if she has a moment. Am I allowed to ask
one question? Sure. Go ahead. One question is fine.
Oh, just one. I'm sorry. Okay. Then I'll start with geraniums. I have a problem. They seem to lose their leaves constantly. They get yellow. And my husband says that I watered it too much. I say not enough. What would you suggest?
Okay, so that's, I love that. I hear I'm doing some marriage counseling. Talk to me about where are the geraniums in full sun, meaning 6 hours of sun every day?
It gets that.
Yes. Are they in pots or the ground? Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Hello?
Neela, are they in pots or in the ground, huh?
Yes, they are in pots.
In pots. Okay, so are they huge, big pots or little pots?
Medium size.
Okay, and how often are you watering?
About every 4 or 5 days.
Oh, are there drainage holes in the pots?
Yes.
Oh, when you water, does the water go right through and out the drainage holes?
Yes.
Okay, and are there saucers, or you allow that water to go through?
A pot inside a pot.
Okay. All right, so at watering pots, medium-sized pots that are in full sun every 4 to 5 days does not sound like too much water. What could be happening is, are they planted into potting soil, or did you take garden soil and put it in the pots?
Whatever came with the geranium, I added potting soil into a bigger pot.
Okay, perfect. And have you fertilized at all?
Yes, I have done that once every 2 weeks or so.
Oh, that's not bad. And you're mixing up the blue stuff and watering with that?
Yes, that's right.
Huh. All right, so it sounds to me like you're doing everything right. Not wrong. Now, if you're concerned, because honestly, my potted plants that are in full sun in this weather, I've been watering them like every day. So it could be like, you know what you need to do is maybe get one of those. It's called a moisture meter. It's a little, just a little gizmo you can pick up at your local Canadian Tire or whatever. And it's got a probe, and you stick the probe into the soil, and it tells you how much moisture is in the soil down 4 or 5 inches. So further than we can stick our fingers. If you're finding that your moisture meter says that the soil is bone dry after only 2 or 3 days, then I would water more often. And remember too that potting soil, when it dries out, it's based on a lot of either peat moss or core, which is a fibrous material that shrinks when it's dry. So if your potting mix or if your container mixes that are in your pots get so dry that it's shrunk right down and there's actual spaces between the soil mixture and the walls of the pot, it can be really hard to saturate the soil. What happens is the water just runs right through. So you get out a stick or a fork, excuse me, and you mix the soil around before you water. And water slowly. Water, you know, 2 or 3 cups, walk away for half an hour, come back with 2 or 3 more cups. Just keep watering until the soil swells out.
All at once. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So that could be what's going on, is you're so dry that the water you're adding isn't having an impact. Because geraniums are pretty tough and they do handle dry conditions, but what you're doing sounds fine otherwise.
Mm. All right.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm
Dude,
okay.
Welcome.
Continue.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call, Neela. I'll talk to you again, okay?
I think Neela was a first-time caller, you know. I don't remember her voice.
No, and I'm going to give her the bell. And actually, the name was written there wrong because I recognized Mila's voice as soon as she called. She used to be our neighbor right across the street.
So
she moved to me. Yeah, Frank and Mila. So I know exactly who we're talking. So I'm going to give Mila the bell.
There she goes.
There you go. You got your first time caller.
She's got wings.
There you go. You got wings. We have to go to a quick break, but we will be back with more right here on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yes, we are back with more on The Garden Show, and the lines all of a sudden started to light up like wildfire. It was like fireworks. So we are going to go right to one of those callers. We've got Josie from Toronto waiting on the line. Welcome to The Garden Show, Josie.
Yes, good morning. I want to ask you about rhubarb. Now, I've taken all the rhubarb stalks that I've wanted, and I'm not going to pick the rest because some of them are very small and spindly. Should I leave the stalks standing, or should I pull them out?
Oh, the stalks, leave them, yep. No, let the plant grow. The more you allow it to grow for the rest of the summer, the bigger it will be next year.
Okay, so leave the stalks and leaves as they are.
The leaves. If you want to remove the flower, you could definitely do that. Do you have a flower coming up?
Yes, they were earlier.
Oh, okay. I mean, you can remove flowers because, remember, a lot of energy goes into flower production and seed production. Yeah. So we grow rhubarb for the leaves. When you see the flowers, it's like basil, right? We remove the basil flowers when we see them. Same thing with rhubarb. Remove the flowers, leave the leaves.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you, Charlie.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for the call there, Josie. Okay, going to dive right into the next caller there, okay? Dan from Brampton is our next caller on the line. Welcome to The Garden Show, Dan.
Hi, Charlie and Dean. Hi.
Morning.
Hey there.
Yeah, morning. I had a question about tomatoes. I guess every year I buy, you know, the tomatoes that are pre-grown somewhere, and I always trust the tags that's in them. This year, my tomatoes, which were tagged as beefsteaks, ended up being as Roma tomatoes.
Oh.
They don't slice and eat quite as nice as beefsteak tomatoes. So
take them to Dean. He loves Romas. Carry on.
I'll take all the Romas you can give me there, Dan.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, actually, Dan, I was talking to you yesterday.
Oh, we were talking. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You played a tune for my dad.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I've been filling in for Daniel Vanukovsky on the New Classical FM, the sister station. So, I was there. I remember absolutely talking to you. We played the March Past. There you go.
Yeah.
Multitaskers.
Is there a way of telling, looking at a tomato plant, what it is or isn't?
No. No, and that's not until it starts to set the fruit. They all look the same. I mean, they don't look exactly the same. There are some differences because, remember, some tomatoes grow really tall, like beefsteaks, and they what we call indeterminate. And then some tomatoes stay short, like Patio or Tiny Tim, and they're what we call determinate. So there is a difference in the growth habit in that sense, but you really don't know exactly what the tomatoes are till they start to ripen. And you're right, in the stores, sometimes they messed up back at the nursery, but sometimes it's just small children in stores move things around, including tags and tomatoes. I blame the small children. It could be anybody. But you know what? Your best way to grow the tomatoes you want to grow is grow them from seed, and then you know exactly what you're growing.
I was thinking about that, yeah.
And they're not that hard to grow. We talk about it every year round about the third week of March on the show.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
And actually, I called you.
What was that? Thanks. Yeah, thanks for the question, Dan. And like I said, yeah, you get any of those aromas you want to get rid of, I was going to say throw them my way, but that would maybe be messy. So
you have to go to Brampton to pick them up, I think.
I do. Yeah, I do. I love aromas, and because I love to make my own sauce for tomato sauce, just your pasta or pizza. I make my own pizza sauce. I guess San Marzano is sort of one of the go-to sauce tomatoes to use. Okay,
I'm a big fan of slicing tomatoes, you know, the big steaks. Or the ones I'm growing this year called Primo Red. I had great success with them last year. And so far, I must have, 150 tomatoes on four plants right now.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
Yeah,
wow.
And they're going to be – they're still green, of course, but they're starting to show a little bit of orange. So
wow. Now, will you won't make sauce with those, will you?
No, we just eat them like apples.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, you know, again, if you have any leftovers, I'll take them. So I get, you know.
Woo-hoo. Bit of a trip to come get them.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. We have to take a quick break, but we have more callers on the line to get to. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yeah, welcome back to The Garden Show. Got to tell you, Charlie, that little intro has resonated with me today because I hear that thunder and the rain, and I thought, oh, that would be nice right about now. It sounds like there's a lot of places in the province that are on the dry side.
I think you're right. It's another one of those dry summers or dry Julys. I think we'll get some rain eventually.
Yep. Okay, let's go to Carol on the line. Carol is calling from Toronto. Welcome to The Garden Show, Carol.
Good morning. I'm calling about my small orchid. It did well. It had little flowers and so forth. And what I do, Charlie, is I give it about 6 ice cubes once a week. I don't think you agree with that, do you?
Well, I just think it's a bit cold. Yeah. If I was an orchid, I wouldn't like it. It's just they're tropical plants, and ice cubes are Arctic.
Well, you know what? A big a sprout came right up. It's got 1, 2, 3, 4. It's got 4 big leaves that it came with. And now I've got a lovely green leaf that's come right up the middle.
Yeah.
But the flowers are gone. So my question is, these little branches that the flowers were on, do I leave them or do I trim them back?
Are the little branches green or brown?
Green.
Leave them until they're brown. You could be amazed to find that more flowers will emerge from those green flower stalks.
Okay.
Okay, so just leave them till they're brown. One way or the other, more flowers will come or they'll turn brown. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I just see all the little areas where the flowers have fallen off. It looks like a cacti plant right now with all the little spiky.
No, that's normal.
Yeah.
It's okay. From those little spiky bits where you see the little spiky bits, those are nodes, and another branch can grow from the branch, which is always interesting. And it can happen quite unexpectedly, and your orchid sounds very happy, so it certainly could happen.
Yeah, it does. It does seem happy, except I think flowers sometimes take years to come back, from what I've heard.
No,
not really.
No, it sounds like you're doing a good job. You're getting new growth, new green growth, which is important. So expect it to flower. Orchids will flower quite cyclically, I find. They'll flower at least once a year, but often flower all year if you can provide the right conditions, because the flowers last for months.
Yes. Okay. Well, it looks like it's in a good spot. And as I say, it's got lots of greenery on it. So, all right.
Good.
Thank you very much. And I enjoy your show immensely. And have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. Yeah, you too, Carol. And maybe call back in the fall and let us know how your orchids are doing. I would be curious to know. We have one last caller on the line. We have Maureen from North York. Welcome to The Garden Show, Maureen.
Oh, good morning, Charlie and Dean. I have a tree question, Charlie, and I know you'll be able to answer it since you've planted so many trees. As part of the city tree planting program, last week I got a northern catalpa. Now, it's about 7 feet high. Apparently they come around occasionally to water it, but here in North York we've had hardly any rain for like 6 weeks. So I was wondering how often, if I should supplement that and water it myself.
Definitely yes. Maureen, do not trust them. They are unlikely to show up when at all. Like, just don't rely on them at all. Instead, remember, so here's the deal. You want a brand new 7-foot planted tree that's obviously been staked and planted properly. It should receive anywhere from 10 to 15 gallons of water every week.
Wow.
If there's no rain. Okay. So 10 to 15 gallons, well, even just work with 10. So your average pail that we use, you know, like when we're washing the floor, or, you know, with a pail of water, those are 2-gallon pails. So you want about 5 pails of water And you don't want to just slosh it on the plant. Hopefully there's a bit of a bowl around the plant. There should be mulch not touching the stem or the bark, but in a nice sort of a donut around the plant. And what you'll do is you'll pour water into that donut at the base of the trunk of the tree, and you'll wait till that all percolates down through the soil before you pour another pail of water. And just put it on your calendar. It's one of those things that, you know, you might want to put two or three pails every two or three days, or you might want to put five pails in one day, but roughly 10 gallons per week if there's no rain, and particularly if it's hot and windy.
Okay, but I'm just saying I'm delighted with this tree. I'm so happy. I think it's a wonderful program.
It is, and a catalpa is a great tree. It grows quickly. It's got beautiful big leaves, wonderful flowers, but you might not like the big pods that are there later, the fruit.
Oh, you know what, Charlie? I am a big tree lover, and so, you know, and I don't have a tree in the front, so I have trees in the back, but not in the front, so I am just totally delighted it can drop pods or whatever it wants.
Yeah, and it'll give you nice privacy soon because it's a quick growing tree. Yeah, great. Okay. Good for you, Maureen. Take care. And just one thing I would add is that when I'm talking about 10 gallons of water every week, I'm talking about July. Once we get into September, October, the temperature is dropping, the water requirements go down. So, of course, we don't maintain that 10 gallons as we get into winter. But then again, we don't stop watering entirely either. So it becomes a bit of a cutback on your water based on temperature and weather conditions till freeze up.
Okay, thank you so much, Charlie.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks again for the call, Maureen. Always nice to hear from you.
Exactly.
just want you to know that I have my scone recipe that was requested. I have it in.
I was going to ask you, because last week Jacqueline called, and she said, give us that recipe for lavender scones.
Yeah,
it sounds delicious.
Yeah, my lavender lemon oat scones. You got
Ooh,
it.
Baby. So,
Now you need to direct me as to how to get these to Jacqueline and anybody else who's interested.
Well, remember that this show is podcast, and I always write a little preamble about the show that goes onto the AM 740 website, telling people what the podcast is about. So I would just ask anybody who wants to see this recipe. It won't be available till probably Wednesday this week. So coming up, you know, July, whatever that is. And you'll be able to go to AM 740, go to podcasts, go to the garden show, go to all the 15 years of garden shows that are in the archives. But the most recent one on this date will say, check out the lavender scone recipe, and I will have it right there in that story.
Got it. And so in the meantime, that gives everybody a few days to get some lavender. So we're going to need about a half cup.
Anything else special that we need to have? Lemon? You said lemon?
Lemon, yeah. Lemon zest. You know, I think everything else is pretty standard for the pantry. But yeah, lemon zest, a couple of tablespoons, and lavender. Yeah.
But lavender flowers or lavender leaves?
Lavender flowers.
Oh, there you go. Lavender flowers.
Yeah,
all right,
the flowers
there you go.
Looks pretty. Looks
beautiful.
Pretty. It tastes good. It's fragrant, the whole bit.
We love edible plants, edible flowers particularly. Hey, thanks, Dean. That sounds like a lot of fun. So we'll be looking for that recipe. Thanks to our great callers. Couldn't do the show without some of these great questions and tips. Thank you, Carlos. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.